This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Vabene Elikem Fiazzi was born in the Volta region of Ghana. She received her bachelor's in fine arts from KNUST in the Department of Painting and Sculpture in Kumasi, Ghana, going on to study there for her master's in fine arts, where she's instructed incoming undergraduate and new graduate students in a radical philosophy of love and art intervention that is born out of her deep personal experience in serious scholarly research in Ghana and abroad. Her performance projects concentrate on questions of marginality and identity, looking at the lives of socially marginalized human beings, those whose lives have been central targets for the biologically advanced weaponry that is social exclusion, socioeconomic marginalization, political subjugation and silencing, and everyday violence. Exploring her own body as the embodied site of these violences and engaging with the framework of performativity, Vabene archives her own life each and every day by making and collecting multimedia artifacts of her life through photography, video, fabric swatches, sound recordings, and other ephemera. She uses these materials to write and rewrite both the short-term shifts and long-sweeping trends in her identity across space, time, and borders. Her embodied performances, constructed as a material collaboration with these archival objects, critique the treatment of the LGBTQ plus individuals across the world, the treatment of elderly women, these are just a few examples, within their social networks in Ghana, the treatment of disabled persons, the violence done to and done by soldiers left to fight our wars, and the fundamental bonds of life and the living that tie us together on this very small and very strange planet in the midst of the vast otherness that is space. But do not let this come across to you as a story of someone standing up for the marginalized against a majority. That's not the story that you've written, ostensibly. Social violence affects all of us, those who execute it, who buy into it, those who experience it, but also those who are left to replicate it, the children who witness it and have it guide their understanding of what things are and are not possible in the world. Vab's work bridges the space between the marginalized and the marginalizers, like when she performs nude, revealing the biological and physical structures of her body, and then dresses up in her clothing, putting her makeup on, in the downtown streets of Jamestown, an extremely disadvantaged neighborhood in urban Accra in the nation of Ghana, a prime site of democracy and black liberation in the world, but also a nation that has posed fierce legal oppositions to the exercise of non-cis identity. When I first met Vabene in 2016, she told me, without mincing words, "Art is that I survive these performances without protection, that I show people that they don't have to threaten or kill me, and that they won't. They keep waiting for someone else to do it for them. And in not doing it, they become my collaborators, collaborators in my performance and in my life." Vabene has conducted art scholarship, curated exhibitions, and staged performances, both sanctioned and unsanctioned in Ghana, and with important cultural institutions abroad in Nigeria, Cape Verde, Belgium, Germany, Amsterdam, the UK, Brazil, France, Spain, the USA, South Africa, and others. An exciting new project that she's currently engaged in is her work in arts organizing and education, where she has worked tremendously hard to create space for other contemporary performance artists, especially those from the Global South. The name of that residency is PR. It's an artist residency program in Kumasi, Ghana, and she's directed, organized, fundraised, peddled, and literally sold water on the street to make it possible for her to host 58 artists this coming year from over 13 countries for at least 1 month each in a dedicated institutional space that she's built with her own hands. But in all honesty, I don't think I could give as good an introduction to your work as you could yourself. We're very excited to have you here in Philadelphia for the second time, Vabene. The first time you came, there was a performance, but it was for the dead only. We visited cemeteries across Philadelphia and explored sites of death and religion, and only the people who were documenting it and the dead were witnesses, because it was also a pop-up intervention. I'm very glad that the living joined us today.
Thank you so much, Alisa. I'm so honored and grateful to be back in Philadelphia. Yes, it was the first time coming here in 2018, August. At the time, I was in a residency with Robert Wilson, the American theater director. And then from there, I decided to visit Philadelphia and also to see the family here and plan to do performance for only deaf people. So it was a short visit, like 1 week, and it was basically performing in the graveyard. I think the video is on the screen also with this, if there is time you could watch at least 1 minute of it. Yes, so I think Alisa has said a lot already, but this particular performance is a very specific performance. And you could see the interplay between the virtual space and the physical space that I am navigating or have been navigating actually in my life. So the video recorded is from Turkey, and this performance is in sync with the struggle of non-binaries at the borders. And just not non-binaries, but also black people. And not just black people, but also lesser classes. So it's not just, we cannot reduce everything to gender marginalization or gender queerness or whatever, but there are layers of class, layers of religion, layers of race, layers of even ethnicity, even if you are within the same race. So for me, this became very important for me to embark on this project. In parallel to other larger projects that I've been running all over the year. So this particular project started since 2015, when I started developing the concept and the idea of challenging legal documents as opposed to the body. So in this performance, which I call the video Invisible Body, I always consider my body in spaces as illegal body. So I have the right document, I have document that is validated by every other institution that could check it, but my body is illegal in spaces. And therefore, there is something confusing. There is something that people cannot comprehend. Currently, I can hardly bank in Ghana. I have serious issue with my bank in Ghana because they will not let me do any other transaction. They will not print my statement, nothing, unless I do by the ATM card. So my ATM card expired, and then I begin to face a very huge challenge. So this was just so recent. Institut Français was inviting me for a project in Paris and Marseille. But before that, they have to pay into my account. And before they pay into my account, the bank must sign, because it's also very bureaucratic in France, the bank must sign on a statement that validates that the bank works with me, or I work with the bank, or I'm a customer in this bank. Which is not the same case in many other institutions that I've worked. I just submit my bank details and there is the transfer. So it's been difficult. And then the bank, because I keep pushing the bank to sign this document, and then there was a sanction. But fortunately, something happened that the bank called for a board meeting across the country just because of me. Which, even though I did not gain this victory, for me, it was another victory for me to cause them to have a board meeting to discuss a subject like this. Because none of the banks, I've been to different branches of the bank, none of them was willing to exercise this signatory. None of them. I went to the headquarters, even the headquarters could not. So at last, my branch had to call and inform the board to call for a meeting on my case, which happened, and I was served with a letter. So this is the journey of this. So the performance happened that I had to perform for the camera. Performing for the camera in the sense that those who already have seen my passport that I gave out, you would see the biodata that is a different image. So I stayed in my room for like weeks to grow my beard and my mustache. And when I even have to go out to the city or any place, I go under the veil. So I was almost like a Muslim using a hijab for this number of days just to grow this other body of me. And this was very interesting for me to see that my body becomes like a plant, that I can nurture it, I can raise it, I can do anything to it. And so this happened, and then I applied for a new passport just to have the so-called masculine face, which I did. And then all my visa are feminine visas. So wherever I go in this world, I'm traveling on different visas, and all the visas are also not looking alike, because each visa, I try as much as possible to perform it and to gain a slight different identity, even though all of them were female. And so I create this body of multiple identities, like a virus that is running through my passport, and yet they are legal viruses. So how do these institutions deal with legal materials that do not possess the nature of legal identity? So it's very complex. And so I know how much vulnerable I became doing this project, because anything can happen to me in any of the countries, any of the borders. I have been detained 3 days in Cape Verde. I have been detained in Amsterdam. I've been detained in even Germany. And even the so-called countries that we think that they are more enlightened, I've been detained in all these places. But I also understand that it's not just about my gender identity. Of course, the black body cannot be ignored in these spaces as well. And I'm not holding a diplomatic passport. I'm not holding an American passport, not even a UK passport, Ghanaian passport. So it's also about where you are coming from, who you are. And then now we talk about the body. So this project was about this. And this performance is called Ritual Realities. So now let's move away from virtual realities to ritual realities. So the rituals that each and every one of us have to perform to create our own realities, to embody our own sense of becoming and sense of identity and sense of belongingness. It is a new reality, as opposed to the social realities that some of us are being denied, because there are different realities everyone is encountering. The society expects you in a different form of reality, and then you perform a new reality for yourself and become unreal to the society because it does not conform to the way they create that reality. So it's also recreating bubbles within bubbles. So this was the entire idea about this performance, how we recreate these bubbles within bubbles and within bubbles and in its infinity. So even as a cis person or non-binary person, whatever identity that we embody, we perform it each day. We go to the bathtub, you take our bath, we go to the mirror, we look at ourselves, we perform it each day. When it comes to even race, we perform it. In Ghana, a woman is so proud to have hair on the leg, but in the Euro-Americas, it is something that they cannot deal with. You have to take the hair off the leg. But if this hair should come to Ghana, people will embrace it because they want to be proud to have hairs on the chest as a woman, a hair on the leg. So you see, even gender is also different based on the cultural spaces that we find ourselves. And so we are even performing race, and performing race in gender, and performing gender in race. So the entire idea of ritual reality is for people to encounter their own realities and how they develop these realities for themselves. And for trans identity, it's very important to understand that each and every trans has a different way of embodying their own realities. a way of encountering their own realities, a way of seeking for their own realities. Not every trans would necessarily want to go to surgical operation, medical processes to be validated as a trans person. But people can just perform their own rituals. And then mentally, psychologically, and physically, they feel so much accepted by themselves. That's the first call of acceptance. And that becomes their own reality and our own realities. And it is only then if the society is willing to experience our realities, then we can be talking about a common ground. Otherwise, they see unreal and we see a real. So it's a very paradoxical concept of looking at identity from different spectrums.
Thank you. There's a lot I could respond to in there, but I want to pause for a moment on the notion of ritual because it's really important to this performance, and it's important to your broader work, specifically this interface between ritual and religion, or even ritual and anti-religion. And then in this performance tonight, something that that I witnessed more than the other performances that I've seen is the combination, the dual-edged nature of ritual as both potentially violent, as an act that is being thrust upon you, as something that you are swept up in, willing or not. And then secondary to that, the way that it can be reclaimed to become an act of self-care. And then tertiary to that, the way that even acts of self-care have embedded violences in them that we have to deal with. And I'm really interested. I'd love to hear what you have to say about where you believe your what kind of statements your work makes about ritual and religion, and where how you conceive of the difference and their importance to you.
Thank you very much. First of all, I would say, those who have not been at my presentation this afternoon, I made it clear that I was born Christian. I did not become a Christian. I was born a Christian. That even my pregnancy was already baptized. So I was already born Christian. My parents were Christian. And I grew as a Christian, became a pastor, became an evangelist, and I was teaching the gospel across churches and cities and villages, which I will talk about how costume became part of my work. And I was doing this until 32 years when I felt like, no, I need to begin to raise new questions to my being. And this is when I renounced Christianity. Ironically, the age of Christ. This is something I didn't even consider until I was given a presentation in Germany 2016, and then one of the audience like, what are you talking about? You renounced Christianity at 32? Do you know that was the age of Christ? Like, oh yeah, it never occurred to me. And this is how also chances are playing so much roles as a spiritual embodiment in my work. Because this is not planned, it's not intended, but it happened in my life. That I renounced Christianity at 32, at the same age that Christ died. Okay, so when it comes to rituals, spirituality, and religion, of course, I try as much as possible not to even have anything to do with any form of religion in my life. I don't know, in the near future, something might happen for me to find some kind of religion that I feel like I want to be in. But for now, I am non-religious. I just want to be very spiritual. I just want to keep my conscience so much awakened that I can feel and I can smell love in everybody that I meet. So I don't need religion to teach me how to love. I need to love regardless of religion, so that if there is nothing promising me, I can still love. So that was the idea of my journey in renouncing even Christianity. Then coming to rituals, ritual is just basically a form of repetition and remaking and recreating. And then it becomes part of your life. So this is why I also consider all of us performing this ritual every day. It is only because most, especially Christianity, has misrepresented the idea of ritual. And in many African countries, ritual is just demonic practice. So the word ritual alone tells the people, if I perform anything in Ghana and I name it ritual, believe you me, many people will not come because they have seen the word ritual. So meanwhile, the Christianity itself is full of a lot of rituals, the communions, baptism, all those things are rituals, but they do not refer to them as ritual. But if it is non-Christian, which is pagan, they call, then they say it's a ritual. So it's another form of very, very strong-rooted colonial representation. So when I begin to use rituals, I'm really considering the idea of repeating something over and over again and considering it as part of your life, and then it becomes you, and then people can see it as a ritual, can see it as a spiritual practice. So all that I've performed here, we all use costumes and everything, beads and the rest, so they are ordinary materials. But the way I install, the way I play with them, the way I try to meditate over them has changed our idea about the same materials that we use every day. Perhaps if I'm using Oxford's dictionary and treating it like the Bible, everybody will begin to see it as a Bible. So this is a ritual. So this is how I begin to see the idea of ritual and how all these constructions became part of man-make. It's our own making. Religion, beliefs, the church is our own making. Before any of those things, the first thing is humanity. Before even race, the first thing is humanity. So how could we again look at humanity without looking at religion? Okay, so now coming to ritual and violence. We have to claim, some of us have to reclaim these violences and make them part of our healings. Because even stripping ourselves naked, because in Kevin I was stripped naked in the airport. So that actually was also part of what I was doing here. Each time I take off something, I look at the image there. It reminds me, and I'm reliving this trauma. And it's one of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had in my entire life and entire practice. Detained for three days. Ministry, the Prime Minister of Cape Verde has to sign a letter for me to leave the country, and yet they defile this letter and strip me naked. I couldn't believe it. So it's one of the most traumatic experiences. But the question is, I am an activist. I am an artist. I have the language to speak. I can talk. I can fight until I die. What about someone who cannot talk for him or herself? What about someone who is so weak that he or she just think that they are right to treat her the way they did? Because in the church, if you are homosexual, they tell you it's a possession of the devil. And you believe that it's a disease or it's a sickness. So you don't see it as violation. So you even feel pity for yourself. You even go to the priest to pray for you, to de-homosexualize you. So the same thing happens in the border. If you are the less marginalized community or black race crossing this border, you are so intimidated that you don't see it wrong. The way they treat you, you just think that it's a privilege for them to stamp your passport to enter America. So no matter what they do to you, you even say thank you. You know, so this again was the idea of slavery. Slaves must obey their masters. Women must be submissive to their husbands. So it's the same idea. So there are many women in different countries who believe that it is not a crime if your husband slaps you. That is why you call your husband Lord. You know, so this idea is just in transition from one element of identity to the other. So for me to reclaim this, I need to embody this violence again, because I believe healing is another embodiment of violence. You have, even if it's medical, orthodox medicine or whatever, you take bitter pills to be whole, to recover. So it means it's not a pleasant experience, but you need to do it. So we have to undergo these violences, which I actually dramatically presented here, to behold, cutting my hair, doing this. It's undergoing the violence to reclaim a certain healing. So for me, this is how I see ritual, healing, religion, the concept of love, the concept of submission, and even enslavement.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm struck in your words that you've called out some incidents that have happened that I just want to make sure that the audience hears, specifically the way in which, if I can find a good way to put this, which is you reference a virus, and you've referenced this in several presentations, and I want to liken this, those of us who come from an academic background, if you've read Deleuze, and the descriptions of lines of flight, I think that there is some similarity there, which is the notion that you can, that there are ways of, there are lines of escape within this extremely rigid system. And although we can't really conceive, or you don't specifically talk about being able to see those ahead of time, Vabene has had some very important experiences simply in doing art and doing something that many people would say does not have necessarily a tangible political benefit, a tangible act of protest. That to say that art is protest is to say in some ways now, you know, nothing. Everyone says art is protest. What does it mean that art is protest? But Vabene has had experiences where the president of Ghana has been alone in a space that ostensibly he could not escape when you were performing, even though he had instructed ahead of time that there would be no nudity in this performance. Mm-hmm. You were curating the show at Chale Wote. Yeah. There is a, and at Jamestown Prison, which is where Kwame Nkrumah himself was kept and imprisoned. Vabene did a performance in a small space where you had to enter a small hole to get in. And the last minute, the president said he was visiting. No one could do nudity, and he found himself in a small space he couldn't escape, with Vabene performing the violence that had been done to trans and homosexual individuals in the state of Ghana. And there are photographs of the president's jaw literally dropping to the floor in a moment that he could not escape. Not only that, the Ministry of Culture in Cape Verde, when you're detained at the airport, and I was on the phone with you through this incident,
yeah,
somehow you get the Ministry of Culture himself to show up, to come to the airport, to confront these systems, and to realize in the end that he had no control over the kind of military jurisdiction that occurs at borders, that the sheer amount of power that exists by, in the United States it would be the TSA, but in any nation where these zones of transit are hyper-militarized, the Ministry of Culture was powerless to either remove you or to help you leave the country. Mm-hmm. And these are not the only incidents that have been like that. So I just want to pause on the fact that art as protest can have important effects. The meeting that you're talking about, a board meeting that occurred in a Ghanaian bank simply to discuss the issue of how to deal with people whose identities don't match the biological identity you're led to expect on their passport, that these are ways of prompting conversation that have had effects in Ghana.
Yeah.
And finally, for the last question before we turn it over to the audience, I've mentioned collaboration to you before as one of the most provocative things you've said to me, which is bringing up the fact that people who may be quite inimical to us can be considered our collaborators in certain situations. How the audience becomes your collaborator by not killing you or allowing you to survive, as you say, or even if someone in the audience becomes aggressive, you've found that the audience themselves prevents the actions from escalating, which is important. And then also the notion of collaborator in its military sense, to be a collaborator, that's been something that's been used against you specifically by parts of the art movement, and I think this is not an issue isolated to Ghana at all, so I don't want to pick on them, but on parts of the art movement that are very interested in decolonization, but have begun to see the notion of LGBTQ identity as one of collaboration with Western forces, which of course your art research into cultural history in Ghana would show is not the case, mm-hmm. but unfortunately mm-hmm. is a strong stereotype. Yeah. So if you just say a little bit about your, with all that in mind, about what collaboration means to you, and then we can turn it over to the audience.
Okay, I will be very much interested in listening to and hearing questions from the audience, but I will take this one first. Yes, for me, collaboration is a very, very, very broad language in my practice. There are direct collaboration where I have to work with artists, develop a project, and present. This I would consider a formal collaboration. There are other forms of informal collaborations which are also intimate. Like we did a collaboration here. I come to you, you undress me, you pick this, you do that. It's very informal. You were not aware. You were not even informed. You did not even have an idea this was going to happen to you. You have to deal with it as I move to you. If you refuse, fine. But you have to deal with it. So imagine there is a homophobe over here, and then I walk to you, and knowing that this is a trans body and this is an LGBTQ person, this person would have to deal with this reality immediately. Either you pretend it and say, oh, it's okay, I will do it, but I don't agree with it. It's up to you. You have collaborated. Whether you agree or you don't agree, you have been part of it. That's another intimate, informal collaboration. There are other collaborations also which are happening across the borders, like you see. Now, it's an indirect and informal collaboration. It is, I call them intimate enemies. So these are like intimate enemies because their collaboration is about exercising power and authority. So this is happening, and they are all documented, of course. But they have to deal with my passport, they have to deal with my body, sometimes lock you in a room, re-examine you, and leave people in queue. It's a kind of ongoing performance in collaboration with them. The most important part of this collaboration is that it's a way to decolonize them and decolonize the space. If I leave, there is a conversation there. Sometimes you are even there, you realize that they show your passport to the next person, to the next person, to the and they continue conversation. They speak their languages, but I know they are discussing the passport, and they are discussing what they are seeing. In Turkey, it could be weird to them. In Morocco, it was weird to them. So in Amsterdam, it's not that it's weird, but it's just about race and other stuff. So places that they have no encounter with this identity, for them, it's like the first encounter. And so they are dealing with a certain kind of nightmare. And it's a collaboration because they'll continue discussing this thing even as I am gone. So these collaborations are happening. Now, in Ghana, the most important thing that's happening to me in Ghana now is that over the years, I have suffered some form of humiliation, detentions at the airport in Ghana. Now, I have acquired about 4 or 5 high-rank officers from the airport who willingly would give me their contact. It's like, hey, it's a long time I have seen you. You've not. I was like, okay, you have my contact. If you are passing by, just give me a call. If there's any problem, just let me know. I was like, oh, what a good day. You know, so it feels also like, because at the end of every encounter, I try to reestablish a certain form of peace and intimacy before I leave the airport, no matter how humiliating they are to me. Because I believe that it's not them. It is a colonial system in which they found themselves. So I believe they are robots. So how can we reconfigure these robots? It's not about destroying the robots, because more robots will be produced. But can we take advantage of the robot and then disconfigure them and reconfigure them? That reminds me of the Matrix, those who watch the Matrix. You know, you just take out the red pill and give the blue pill, and then it changes the whole story. Or you take the blue pill and give the red pill, then it becomes violent. So this I see as also robots there. How do I give them blue pill instead of red pill? And this is my responsibility. So it's not about even destroying the robot, but taking advantage of this already made robot, because I could not make, or I cannot make a robot. So if one is made, that's good for me. Just grab it and reconfigure it. So this is the kind of system I use as a virus. But it's not easy because you are more vulnerable than anything. So this is the kind of collaborations. And there are several forms of collaborations in my practice. Some of them I'm not even aware I'm collaborating. I just pass and it happens. So
thank you.
Yeah.
That's great. So yeah. Right before we turn it over, I was just going to add that you can watch what Vabene is talking about because of her wonderful use of social media. But if you follow her on Instagram or go through her Facebook live feeds at Craziest Artist, you can see her get arrested by a team of police, Ghanaian police officers.
Yeah. I'm live all the time.
Booked.
Even if I'm cooking.
Whilst thanking them as collaborators and then eventually bailed out by two leading figures of the contemporary art movement in West Africa. It's quite a it's quite a video to watch.
There are a lot of live feeds that you can see on my Facebook. There are some that I have made them private for some reasons. Because even if I, like recently I was in a hotel and I didn't trust the hotel, so I have to be live 24 hours in the hotel. I went live. The secret of going live is that even if my phone is taken away, I have recorded online. Unless you're able to open my account and close my account. Because if I record on memory chip, you can take my phone and that's all. So this is one of the secrets for me to when I go to spaces that I cannot trust and I have to record, I don't record on my phone. I don't record on my, any of my, I go live. And I can make it private account. And so nobody knows I'm live. Then afterwards, if I refuse to reveal, I just open it public.
We would love to take
just some questions from the audience.
Was it frankincense? What do you
have? Yeah, incense.
Yeah. Is that part of the ritual, or have anything to do with religion?
Yeah.
Good. Christianity, what they use in the church.
Yeah. Good question. In Ghana, Catholic Church is a marginalized church. That's interesting. In Europe, it's the church. But in Ghana, Catholic Church is the marginalized church. I think in America, it should be the same because America is full of evangelical churches. Pentecostal churches, most of them won't use this kind of materials because it's also considered by some churches as devilish. So the Catholic Church is seen as a demonic church. And those churches that use this kind of thing because it's related to witchcraft, sorcery, and stuff. So we never use this in our church. So while growing, I experienced this in different spaces. Catholic funerals, they will use this stuff. So it's been part of my questioning, what about this material? And it's also very ironical that they said a wise man came to give these materials to the baby Jesus. So there is so much contradiction in the Christian practices. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about it in a context of non-religion, but a material that is a naturally mind. And I use it, and it can reference people to their own religions. Because I am sure in Buddhism, they also use incense. And other religions. So if we have all these people here, everybody will be able to connect just by the scent and just by the smoke to their own religion. This is why it was one of the most important parts of the performance that everybody lights one. So whether you are connected or disconnecting yourself from it, so everybody lights one. And I also see it how interesting it is how people treated it. Some people really treated it like so sacred. You would see it. Not, they don't even want it to fall. They want to put it even while the other ones were burning their hands. They were, yeah. So this was very interesting to see also in the performance. Yeah. So it's neither religious or non-religious, but it's an element that also try to invite the audience to reimagine their own relationship to these materials. Yeah.
What do you want us to take home with us as a result of what you've done tonight? Good. And then where do we go to read more about you and what you're doing?
Fine. Good question. The first one I'll answer. The things that you have to take home is what you have seen and what responsibility you want to own in thinking about it in totality. I say this because I want my audience to reassign themselves the responsibility of witnessing and thinking through as a witness. Perhaps you see an accident on the street. Maybe nobody is going to explain to you or give you a definition of how this car and how this meet and the rest, but you have witnessed this. You will go home and possibly might share this with your partner, your children. You might begin to think this part of the road is very dangerous. So you tell your child or your partner, be careful when you drive in this part of the city this way. You are just taking a certain responsibility without anybody assigning you to. And performance art is a very intimate practice, even if you are not directly involved, because it leaves a lot of questions on your mind. And then people are really now going to take responsibility to digest those questions. If painting, you might be so superficial to enjoy the colors or how beautiful the thing is painted than the content. We only most of the time will assume that we understand painting when we see them in galleries or museums. But mostly we just take home things that we are attracted to. And then we leave what the artist had been thinking actually to do. So we have never digested paintings in galleries and museums. And that is how performance is trying to invite audience to really think about digesting and not just taking away. So for me, my particular, I don't present performances that I want my audience to really enjoy it. I give what people don't want to see. I give what people don't want to even interact with. So it also breaks it away from theater and maybe drama, where the audience are really the target people. It's like customer relationship. But for me, it's like even if I perform, and by the end of the performance, the room become empty, I would begin to clap for myself. So it's hard to say what to take home, but it becomes a shared responsibility for all of us. Because I'm also taking a lot home from the way you responded to the performance. Because I will not be able to ask reasons why some of you did what you do, but I have to think about it. Oh, so why this person treated the incense so beautifully, so calmly? Then that means it means a lot to some people. And that also means that if I had treated this thing so abusively, I could be stepping on people's toe. Like I was saying this afternoon, burying Bible in London, people were dying. I buried 3 Bibles, and people were dying because I was burying the Bible. But the colonial masters came to Ghana, and they collected the things they consider fetish, and they burned them and baptized the people to become Christians. And then when I burn the Bible or bury it, it becomes problematic. Yeah, so this is how my works are. But thank you for the question. And then if you want to read about me, you just even Google my name, or I can give my website, and you can look at my works. Yeah, I have done over, I think I'm making noise, right? Okay, I have done over 50 or 60 performances. Because I hardly repeat performances, and even if I should repeat, I try to reinvent it so that it doesn't become like similar.
And we're directing. I'm also directing a film.
Yeah, I'm also directing a residency, which you can also check the website of the residency. That's another project that I was doing for 4 years without revealing it to the Ghanaian community, because I couldn't trust even the art community. I couldn't trust. Because it's also quite competitive, and within the competition there are different identity struggles, and the kind of things I'm dealing with is not for the masses. So I couldn't trust the system to reveal my underground project. So the residency was since 2014-15, and then I launched it just last year, and when I published it, everybody was surprised in Ghana. By the time they know, it was already in progress and nobody could stop it. Nothing could happen. But I got threats and people telling even like the immediate community, they were like, you have to close down that place because they, you could imagine, if I'm trans, if I'm non-binary, if I'm an LGBTQ person, and they cannot deal with only me, now I've created a space that is hosting over 50 people in a year. So it's like a virus, so it's a threat to them. That if you are one and we are not able to deal with, if you become two, three, four, five, what are we imagining? So you are creating battalions, and this is scary to them. So this is why they, but I know if this continue is able to survive for 5 years, there will be a change. So so the idea of the residency is also to create this temporal family that comes, live together, create works, have conversation, and then they go and they become virus in different parts of the world, and they continue their works, and then another batch comes. So this is the idea of the residency, and it's also an insertion into my artistic practice, how to expand my work, my performativity, without me necessarily being the artist. Yeah, so this is, so I'm really self-directing, self-funding everything at the moment. So next year we have 58 artists, some are coming from the US, 58 artists from all over the world, and I just published the list yesterday night. And I begin to receive a lot of emails and messages because most of the artists are so happy, because I've also traveled and I've seen how artists are struggling to be in spaces. You know, so for me, it's also a way to create this kind of space. So it's a free space. The artists don't pay anything. All they need is, if they're able to get their flight to my place, it's okay. In the first year, I've been able to sponsor about 3 artists, but it was quite expensive, and I cannot continue that because I don't get so much money. So it's just a sacrifice. Yeah. And I'm able to also write to institutions to support some of them. They are considering my invitation letter and granting some people scholarship to travel.